Okay, good. So we are on page 8 in the, and this is a long paragraph introducing this. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Joy of living is the theme of the 12th step. Action, its key word. Giving that asks, giving that asks no reward. Love that has no price tag. What is spiritual awakening? A new state of consciousness and being is received as a free gift. Actually, they just answered their own question. Readiness to receive gift lies in practice of 12 steps. The magnificent reality, rewards of helping other alcoholics, kinds of 12-step work, problems of 12-step work. What about the practice of these principles in all our affairs? Monotony, pain, and calamity turn to good use by practice of steps. Difficulties of practice. Two-stepping. Switch to 12-stepping and demonstrations of faith. Growing spiritually is the answer to our problems. Placing spiritual growth first. Yeah, maybe facing it would be good too. Domination and overdependence. Putting our lives on give and take basis. Dependence upon God necessary to recovery of alcoholics. Practicing these principles in all our affairs. Domestic relations in AA. Outlook upon material matters changes. So do feelings about personal importance. Instincts restored to true purpose. Understanding is key to right attitudes, right action, key to good living. So now we're going to flip over to page 106. And I want to say that I like to tell people that, because one of the things that this step does is it goes through the basic categories of life for everybody and reviews and asks questions and helps us review ourselves in reference to all those categories on the work we've done. How are we doing now compared to what we were like when we came in? And I always tell people, if you run out of questions to ask yourself during a fourth step, there's lots of good questions here that can really be put to use in an inventory. They're really good. All right, so let's start. It says, the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12th step, and action is its key word. And I'll tell you something I love about how he wrote this, because almost the very end of the last big paragraph in the step 12 on page 125 is a sentence, the joy of good living is the theme of AA's 12 steps. So he took that sentence and he made it like bookends at either end of the step, which is really cool. I love that he did that. So the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12 step, and action is its key word. I have this whole paragraph circled as well as that first sentence. Here we turn outward toward our fellow alcoholics who are still in distress. Here we experience the kind of giving that asks no rewards. Here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program. You know, thank you, God, because I'm here to tell you, what did I do with my pencil? I had forgotten about this line in here in dealing with the folks who love to say they maintain on 10, 11, and 12. Because right here it says, here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives, right? Let me circle that. Yeah, it's a goodie. That's a good. I like to get answers straight out of the book when I'm dealing with controversy and conflict, and this is an AA internal conflict and controversy, of course. So let me read that again. Here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives so that we and those about us may find emotional sobriety. Yes, 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 yes. Very important. Good. When the 12th step is seen in its full implication, it is really talking about the kind of love that has no price tag on it. Put those over there. Our 12th step also says that as a result of practicing all the steps, we have each found something called a spiritual awakening. To new AAs, this often seems like a very dubious and improbable state of affairs. What do you mean when you talk about a spiritual awakening, quote unquote, they ask. Maybe there are as many definitions of spiritual awakening as there are people who have had them. But certainly each genuine one has something in common with all the others. And these things which they have in common are not too hard to understand. And boy, I got a bunch of this circled here. When a man or a woman has a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that he has now become able to do, feel, and believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set on a path which tells him he is really going somewhere, that life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. In a very real sense, he has been transformed because he has laid hold of a source of strength, which in one way or another he had hitherto denied himself. Or he had not found it even yet. It's one thing to deny yourself something that you know is there. It's another thing to not even know it's there and available, right? He finds himself in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love, of which he had thought himself quite incapable. What he has received is a free gift, and yet usually, at least in some small part, he has made himself ready to receive it. Amen. And I think that, I don't know if I talked before in the other steps about my perspective on the difference between a spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening, but I am happy to share it again. Because a spiritual experience is an experience. It's something that happens. And it doesn't necessarily mean anything except that it's phenomenon. It's a phenomenon, right? Because a person, I've met plenty of people over the years, especially back in the 1960s when the transcendental meditation and the Eastern religions were very big. And here in the U.S., they were blowing up a lot. The Beatles were involved in it, and it was very in. It was very trendy. And I really ran across a lot of people who had spiritual experiences. That's what they called them, and I'll take their word for it. But their lives didn't change. Because the thing about an awakening is it's a whole new perspective on life. And when you have a new perspective, you can't, unless short of having brain damage and being in a coma, you can't lose it. It's like you can't see something a new way and then unsee it. So it really changes. So some people's spiritual awakening can be a very profound experience, like Bill Wilson had some moment when something really different happens and they know that they're having a very unique experience. But it doesn't have to be that, because it can be what we read in the spiritual experience appendix in the big book about the educational variety, meaning it happens slow over a period of time. And so the main thing is, if we've had some kind of spiritual awakening, whether it was an impactful experience in one moment of time or not, we know we've had one when we begin to see genuine change, and we know we want to change, and we find the grace and strength to do so at our part of it. So that's what's really important. And of course, that's what he described in that paragraph that that starts at the bottom of the page 106 and ends pretty much in the middle of 107 that we just finished reading. He says, AA's manner of making ready to receive this gift lies in the practice of the 12 steps in our program. So let's consider briefly what we have been trying to do up to this point. Now here's where he reviews. He begins the review. Step one showed us an amazing paradox. We found that we were totally unable to be rid of the alcohol obsession until we first admitted that we were powerless over it. In step two, we saw that since we could not restore ourselves to sanity, some higher power must necessarily do so if we were to survive. Consequently, in step three, we turned our will and our lives over to the care of God as we, as we understood him. For the time being, we who were atheist or agnostic discovered that our own group or AA as a whole would suffice as a higher power. Beginning with step four, we commenced to search out the things in ourselves which had brought us to physical, moral, and spiritual bankruptcy. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Looking at step five, we decided that an inventory taken alone wouldn't be enough. We knew we would have to quit the deadly business of living alone with our conflicts and in honesty confide these to God and another human being. At step six, many of us balked for the practical reason that we did not wish to have all our defects of character removed because we still loved some of them too much. Yet we knew we had to make a settlement with the fundamental principle of step six. So we decided that while we still had some flaws of character that we could not yet relinquish, we ought nevertheless to quit our stubborn, rebellious hanging on to them. We said to ourselves, "This I cannot do today, perhaps, but I can stop crying out, 'No, never!'" Then in step seven, we humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings, such as he could or would, under the conditions of the day we asked. Well, frankly, as far as God being able, I'm a firm believer God is God. He can do any old thing he wants to. Just because he can doesn't mean he will. And whether he will or not, sometimes, because I can certainly say from the experiences of my own life, that I needed to see myself, and I still do, and whatever I'm working on now, always for me, I need to see my humanness striving to achieve recovery where I've not had it, you know, where I've had behaviors that were destructive and not right. And so I, you know, nothing happens quickly for me. I always have to work at it a long time. And I'm okay with that. I totally have made peace with that. I'm good with it. I don't have a problem. And so, you know, so can he? I believe God can if he wanted to. Will he? That's dependent. I like to say God has three answers to prayers, basically. Yes, no, and later, right? It's always the one, you know. Yes, you have it. No, you're not going to get that. And later on, hang in there. Okay. In step eight, we continued our house cleaning, for we saw that we were not only in conflict with ourselves, but also with people and situations in the world in which we lived. We had to begin to make our peace, and so we listed the people we had harmed and became willing to set things right. We followed this up in step nine by making direct amends to those concerned, except when it would injure them or other people. By this time, at step 10, we have begun to get a basis for daily living, and we keenly realized that we would need to continue taking personal inventory, and that when we were in the wrong, we ought to admit it promptly. In step 11, we saw that if a higher power had restored us to sanity and had enabled us to live with some peace of mind in a sorely troubled world, then such a higher power was worth knowing better by as direct contact as possible. The persistent use of meditation and prayer, we found, did open the channel so that where there had been a trickle, there now was a river which led to sure power and safe guidance from God as we were increasingly better able to understand Him. So practicing these steps, we had a spiritual awakening about which finally there was no question. Looking at those who were only beginning and still doubted themselves, the rest of us were able to see the change setting in. From great numbers of such experiences, we could predict that the doubter, who still claimed that he hadn't got the spiritual angle and who still considered his well-loved AA group the higher power, would presently love God and call Him by name. Occasionally, there are folks who don't. There are folks who are atheists and agnostics, and they just remain that through their experience, but they obviously want to stay sober bad enough that they're willing to do everything they can to support, you know, to do this program. And, you know, I believe that God puts power in His principles, and they contain the power He selected to put in them. And if we practice those principles, they work in our life. And I believe that's why even those who don't believe in God or have trouble with it can still stay sober, because these principles really, really work. So he says, now, what about the rest of the 12th step, the wonderful energy it releases and the eager action by which it carries our message to the next suffering alcoholic, and which finally translates the 12 steps into action upon all our affairs, is the payoff, the magnificent reality of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would say a huge amen to that. Even the newest of newcomers finds undreamed rewards as he tries to help his brother alcoholic, the one who is even blinder than he. This is indeed the kind of giving that actually demands nothing. He does not expect his brother sufferer to pay him or even to love him. And then he discovers that by the divine paradox of this kind of giving, he has found his own reward, whether his brother has yet received anything or not. His own character may still be gravely defective, but he somehow knows that God has enabled him to make a mighty beginning. And he senses that he stands at the edge of new mysteries, joys, and experiences of which he had never even dreamed. And that was not the laugh of humor. That was a laugh of joy at what we're reading, because it is so true. Practically every AA member declares that no satisfaction has been deeper and no joy greater than in a 12-step job well done. And that's even when your 12-step job is working with someone who's already sober and you're sponsoring them, or just being one of the people in their life that helps them and encourages them. You know, whatever level of service we are being to others, it is always a joy. All of it is a joy. I've found that to be. To watch the eyes of men and women open with wonder as they move from darkness into light, to see their lives quickly fill with new purpose and meaning, to see whole families reassembled, to see the alcoholic outcast received back into his community in full citizenship, and above all, to watch these people awaken to the presence of a loving God in their lives. These things are the substance of what we receive as we carry AA's message to the next alcoholic. Nor is this the only kind of 12-step work. We sit in AA meetings and listen, not only to receive something ourselves, but to give the reassurance and support which our presence can bring. Amen. If our turn comes to speak at a meeting, we again try to carry AA's message. I want to say about that too, my personal rule about that, because with my big ego, I love to share, right? I love to talk. And so I had to, one of the areas of my life where I had to practice and set up some self-discipline for myself. My sponsor didn't tell me to. I did this on my own because I already knew my ego by the time I got to program. So I said, if I wanted to share and hoped I got called on but didn't, it wasn't God's will, he didn't need me. Or even if I raised my hand and kept it up, and did not get called on, which has happened at, off and on through the years, it was okay because God did not need me to share what I thought I wanted to share or needed to share. I figure if he wants me to, I'll get called on. And that's just the way I've worked it. I've left even that simplest little act up to him, and that and been at peace with that. So somebody help me pick out where I stopped. Here I found it. If our turn, that's the last sentence, I'll read it again. If our turn comes to speak at a meeting, we again try to carry AA's message. Whether our audience is one or many, it is still 12-step work. There are many opportunities, even for those of us who feel unable to speak at meetings or who are so situated that we cannot do much face-to-face 12-step work. We can be the ones who take on the unspectacular but important tasks that make good 12-step work possible, perhaps arranging for the coffee and cake after the meetings. Or during the meetings, where so many skeptical, suspicious newcomers have found confidence and comfort in the laughter and talk. This is 12-step work in the very best sense of the word. Freely you have received, freely give, is the core of this part of step 12. We may often pass through 12-step experiences where we will seem to be temporarily off the beam. These will appear as big setbacks at the time, but will be seen later as stepping stones to better things. For example, we may set our hearts on getting a particular person sobered up, and after doing all we can for months, we see him relapse. Perhaps this will happen in a succession of cases, or in a succession of times with one person, right? And we may be deeply discouraged as to our ability to carry AA's message. Or we may encounter the reverse situation, in which we are highly elated because we seem to have been successful. Here, the temptation is to become rather possessive of these newcomers. Perhaps we try to give them advice about their affairs, which we aren't really competent to give or ought not give at all. And I want to say about that, if you have experience in an area of life that someone you want, someone who's reached out to you could be aided by, it's okay if you know what you're talking about, if you have experience. So, for instance, I have lots of experience dealing with the damage of childhood abuse, surviving it, staying sober through it, working on other issues as well as those issues, and also with my dual mental illness, the bipolar and the psychosis. I have a lot of experience with that. I've been dealing with that stuff for 70, almost 74 years here. So I do help people with that. But now if somebody asks me something about law, about that an attorney would have to, I have to say, I mean, if I have had a little experience with, I may say, well, I did da da da, but beyond that, and even that, don't hold me to it. I'm not an attorney and I'm not a doctor. You need to see those professionals for that, or you need to talk to someone who has experience with that. So I think it's okay for us to share our experience, strength, and hope in any area of life that we do have solid experience and recovery in. As long as we don't try to help people with something we have no business helping them with. So I that's been my experience, and my observation is that works. So let's see. So then I'll read that sentence again. Perhaps we try to give them advice about their affairs, which we aren't really competent to give or ought not give at all. Then we are hurt and confused when the advice is rejected, or when it is accepted and brings still greater confusion. By a great deal of ardent 12-step work, we sometimes carry the message to so many alcoholics that they place us in a position of trust. They make us, let us say, the group's chairman. Or like you guys said to me once, somebody, I don't know who it was, Alia, it might have been you, said I was the sponsor of the whole group. I said, no, I don't think so. The grandma may be adopting all of you, but no, I'm not sponsoring the whole group. That's too big. That would make my head the size of all of those cows, I would tell you, if I really wanted to embrace that and think that. No, I'm not. Let's see. They make us, let us say, the group's chairman. Here again, we are presented with the temptation to overmanage things, and sometimes this results in rebuffs and other consequences which are hard to take. And I have occasionally had to make amends because, yes, I'm like pretty much all of us. I can go to my inner control freak. And there have been times when I've had to apologize to a group or a meeting and saying, you know, I'm really sorry for what I did or said. I think I shared, and I share it was it you guys I shared? So my in-person women's meeting that I went to quite a few years before, regularly before COVID hit. And so it was a 90-minute meeting, so we would do the readings and the whoever the guest leader is would share for 10 or 15 minutes, and then we'd take a 10-minute break for potty and coffee and whatever, you know. And so when I started going there, when a break was over, I started shouting at the top of my lungs, "Break is over, meeting time!" I was screaming it really loud, and one of the gals I knew for off and on for years, I had been her grand sponsor for a while. I'd sponsored the woman who sponsored her at the time. And she came up to me and she said, "Shelley," she said, "we really don't need you screaming at us that it's time to go back to the meeting. We please don't do that anymore." She was very serious. It really affected her very negatively. So I said, yeah, I said, I'm sorry. I said, yes, you're right. And so in the sharing part, so the participation part of the meeting afterwards, I raised my hand and said, "I owe you all an amends. I had to make an amends for doing that." Yes, because the control freak in me was having a jolly good time shouting at everybody, "It's time to come back and sit down and start this meeting again," you know. And I was in my 40s, sober wise. So this wasn't me as a youngster in sobriety. Nope. This was me being a very long time old timer here. So, but in the longer run, we clearly realize that these are only the pains of growing up, and nothing but good can come from them if we turn more and more to the entire 12 steps for the answers. Oh, there it is again. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Let me serve that. If we turn more and more to the entire 12 steps for the answer. Yep. All right. Now comes the biggest question yet. Oh, this is the biggie. What about the practice of these principles in all our affairs? Can we love the whole pattern of living as eagerly as we do the small segment of it we discover when we try to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety? I think they're going to get into two-stepping at this point. Can we bring the same spirit of love and tolerance into our sometimes deranged family lives that we bring to our AA group? Can we have the same kind of confidence and faith in these people who have been infected and sometimes crippled by our own illness that we have in our sponsors? Can we actually carry the AA spirit into our daily work, meaning our job? Can we meet our newly recognized responsibilities to the world at large? And can we bring new purpose and devotion to the religion of our choice, if we have one? Can we find a new joy of living in trying to do something about all these things? We're talking about two-stepping yet. Furthermore, how shall we come to terms with seeming failure or success? Can we now accept and adjust to either without despair or pride? Here's the good questions, right? These are all really great questions for inventory. If one of them, when, you know, and going back and reading this step for ourselves, going back and looking and saying, oh, that question hurt. Yes, that's me, you know. Can we accept poverty, sickness, loneliness, and bereavement with courage and serenity? Can we steadfastly content ourselves with the humbler, yet sometimes more durable satisfactions when the brighter, more glittering achievements are denied us? The AA answer to these questions about living is yes, all of these things are possible. We know this because we see monotony, pain, and even calamity turn to good use by those who keep on trying to practice AA's 12 steps. And if these are facts of life for the many alcoholics who have recovered in AA, they can become the facts of life for many more. Now I've got this next paragraph. Oh, yeah, here we're going to get into two-stepping. I've got this next long paragraph covered again. Circled. Of course, all AAs, even the best, fall far short of such achievements as a consistent thing. Yes, yes. Without necessarily taking that first drink, we often get quite far off the beam. Our troubles sometimes begin with indifference. And I would say that's a big trouble. That's another word for complacency. Very dangerous. I'm glad they bring it up first. We are sober and happy in our AA work. Things go well at home and office. We naturally congratulate ourselves on what later proves to be a far too easy and superficial point of view. We temporarily cease to grow because we feel satisfied that there is no need for all of AA's 12 steps for us. Or maybe we think we've done them, you know, we've gotten far enough along in them that we can rest on our laurels right where we are. That perspective comes up too for a lot of people. We are doing fine on a few of them. Maybe we are doing fine on only two of them, the first step and that part of the 12th step where we carry the message. In AA slang, then I have this sentence circled too. In AA slang, that blissful state is known as two-stepping, and it can go on for years. Yes, and when you have an old-timer who's been doing nothing but two-stepping, they're usually on a decades-long dry drunk. God bless them. The best intentioned of us can fall for the two-step illusion. Sooner or later, the pink cloud stage wears off and things go disappointingly dull. We begin to think that AA doesn't pay off after all. We become puzzled and discouraged. And so that one sentence there, we begin to think that AA doesn't pay off after all, that attitude, yes, we came to AA so we can get sober, but that attitude can't be the attitude about all the rest of it. We are here to learn to be of service and contribute. And by being of service, maintaining our spiritual growth and spiritual fitness and continuing to go forward. So that right there is a very, very dangerous attitude as well. Then perhaps life, as it has a way of doing, suddenly hands us a great big lump that we can't begin to swallow, let alone digest. We fail to get a worked for promotion. We lose that good job. Maybe there are serious domestic or romantic difficulties, or perhaps that boy we thought God was looking after becomes a military casualty. Or what's heartbreaking is when folks lose their teenage or adult children to this disease because they overdose or drink themselves to death. It's bad enough to lose a child who's fighting for freedom and trying to protect their country. It's another thing, double grief jeopardy to lose a child to this disease. Oh, and I've got some friends who that's happened to. It's very sad. I've got one gal in my life now that I know whose daughter is probably going to wind up like that. Sadly. So what then? Have we Alcoholics in AA got, or can we get, the resources to meet these calamities which come to so many? These were problems of life which we could never face up to. Can we now, with the help of God as we understand Him, handle them as well and as bravely as our non-alcoholic friends often do? In other words, can we put on our big girl panties and our big boy shorts and grow up and handle things in a mature way, is what they're asking in not so many words. Right? Yes. Can we transform these calamities into assets, sources of growth and comfort to ourselves and those about us? Well, we surely have a chance if we switch from two-stepping to 12-stepping. If we are willing to receive that grace of God which can sustain and strengthen us in any catastrophe. Okay, we'll read some more. Our basic troubles are the same as everyone else's, but when an honest effort is made to practice these principles in all our affairs, well-grounded AAs seem to have the ability, by God's grace, to take these troubles in stride and turn them into demonstrations of faith. We have seen AAs suffer lingering and fatal illness with little complaint and often in good cheer. I have known more than one person who was having struggles with relapsing pretty frequently. Got diagnosed with cancer, lived about another year, and it was the first year they had sobriety and a good program going, and one of them even credited her diagnosis as her cancer diagnosis as being the thing that gave her the strength and motivation to finally get sober and stay sober. Yeah, and she died sober. All of them that I've seen, they became my heroes because they just did beautifully. They worked a beautiful program as through whatever time they had left and died sober. And I just thought it was wonderful because they suffered a lot physically from the cancer. And so I've seen that happen. It's really wonderful. So let me read that. We have seen AAs. I think I did read this, but I want to read it again. We have seen AAs suffer lingering and fatal illness with little complaint and often in good cheer. We have sometimes seen families broken apart by misunderstanding, tensions, or actual infidelity who are reunited by the AA way of life. Though the earning power, now he's kind of gone through that part of it. Now we're going to start in on the financial aspects of living sober. Though the earning power of most AAs is relatively high, we have some members who never seem to get on their feet money-wise, and still others who encounter heavy financial reverses. Ordinarily, we see these situations met with fortitude and faith. Now, relationships. Like most people, we have found that we can take our big lumps as they come. But also, like others, we often discover a greater challenge in the lesser and more continuous problems of life, like broken fingernails, torn nylons, you know, the little thing to make us go, ah! You know, we have sometimes a harder time with that than the biggies. Our answer is in still more spiritual development. Only by this means can we improve our chances for really happy and useful living. And he's talking about happy and useful living in the midst of struggles and great difficulties. Not talking about it only when everything's going good. And as we grow spiritually, we find that our old attitudes toward our instincts need to undergo drastic revisions. Our desires for emotional security and wealth, for personal prestige and power, for romance and for family satisfactions, all these have to be tempered and redirected. We have learned that the satisfaction of instincts cannot be the sole end and aim of our lives. Very important. If we place instincts first, we have got the cart before the horse. we shall be pulled backward into disillusionment. But when we are willing to place spiritual growth first, then and only then do we have a real chance. I want to talk about instincts again, too, because our emotions, our thoughts can trigger emotions. And sometimes, I mean, our instincts, our emotions, and our thoughts, I think, are all kind of part of a particular inner part of us, and they all work and can impact each other. But the thing I've noticed is that the feelings we have originate from our instincts. Our instincts are mostly for survival, either survival of the individual or survival of the species or a combination of those two. And so some of the feelings that we get that come from the instincts feel really good, and we like them, like having a really great meal. That feels good. So God made us to enjoy food, so we keep eating and live, right? So we survive. And then there's the sex instinct, you know, so he made orgasm feel. I mean, it's one of the best feelings in the world, let's face it. And so we wanted us to do that so we keep the species going, right? So we keep multiply and populate the earth. But then there's the ones that are there as a protection against danger and harm. And those are usually the negative ones, interestingly enough. And I think it's because they're designed to get our attention immediately. You know, it's like, what was it? There was a, I don't know if you guys saw it, because it was a U.S. Hour-long adventure series, almost a children's series, but not completely, called Lost in Space, I think it was called. And there was a little guy, Robbie. Robbie was the name of the robot. And Will, I forget his last name. And so the robot kind of followed him around, was his babysitter, and say, "Danger, Will, whatever his last name is, danger, Will Nelson, danger, danger." He would warn him. He was kind of like his external instincts. But so fear and anger are usually the two most negative ones that we don't like to feel. But fear is a red alert that something is ready to endanger us. Something's coming up that we need to pay attention to. It's at least a yellow alert, if not sometimes a red alert, right? Pain can be one of those kind of things too, physical pain. And then anger. Whoa, anger is a tough one. It is often very complex without us seeing the complexity of it, the way we can see the complexity of different kinds of fears. But anger is sneaky. It has a lot of levels. And what I've discovered is that anger is an assault at something that has wounded us or is continuing to wound us. It's an assault back at that wounding and offending person or situation to try to make it stop. And what I've discovered is that the intensity level of the anger tells us the intensity level of the pain underneath that it is defending. So if I'm just mildly peeved at something, I have to work at not correcting people when they misspell and mispronounce both my first and my last name. That's been a lifelong pet peeve of mine, right? Sometimes I can let it go, and sometimes I got to correct people no matter what, right? But if we're in a fury or in a homicidal rage, that tells you the pain underneath that is extreme. It's the most intense level of pain we could be feeling, emotional pain, maybe physical pain too. So that's a clue. So if I really fly off the handle at something, I got to check in and say, uh-oh, what's hurting inside of me? Where am I hurting? That really gets us right to the core of it. It goes past the anger and stops us from expressing it, and goes right to the reason for the anger. And so I found that to be very, very, very helpful to know that. Where did I let off? We got a bit. You two folks tell me where I stopped reading.
Towards the middle
Oh,
of,
I think
yeah, go ahead.
I think it's 114. 1, 2, 3, the fourth sentence up from the bottom of the page, if we place instincts first.
Yes.
Yeah, let me, I think I did read that, but that's a good place to read again. If we place instincts first, we have got the cart before the horse. We shall be pulled backward into disillusionment. But when we are willing to place spiritual growth first, then and only then do we have a real chance. And of course, looking at ourselves and finding out what the pain is about is one of the first steps towards spiritual growth in that area. After we come into AA, if we go on growing, our attitudes and actions towards security, emotional security, and financial security commences to change profoundly. Our demand for emotional security, for our own way, had constantly thrown us into unworkable relations with other people. Though we were sometimes quite unconscious of this, the result always had been the same. Either we had tried to play God and dominate those about us, or we had insisted on being overdependent upon them. Where people had temporarily let us run their lives as though they were still cho as though they were, that's strange. Where people had temporarily let us run, oh, got it. Where people had temporarily let us run their lives as though they were still children, we had felt very happy and secure ourselves. Yes, called codependency. But when they finally resisted and ran away, we were bitterly hurt and disappointed. We blamed them, being quite unable to see that our unreasonable demands had been the cause. When we had taken the opposite tack and had insisted, like infants ourselves, that people protect and take care of us, or that the world owed us a living, then the result had been equally unfortunate. This often caused the people we had loved most to push us aside or perhaps desert us entirely. Our disillusionment had been hard to bear. We couldn't imagine people acting that way toward us. We had failed to see that though adult in years, we were still behaving childishly, trying to turn everybody, friends, wives, husbands, even the world itself, into protective parents. We had refused to learn the very hard lesson that overdependence upon people is unsuccessful, excuse me, because all people are fallible and even the best of them will sometimes let us down, especially when our demands for attention become unreasonable. I don't know if I shared this with you guys, but so about 20 years ago, it was 20 because I remember I was 63 years old, 20, I mean, almost 21 years ago now. So I'm sitting here one day and I don't think about my parents 24/7 or dwell in anything about them unless I'm doing inventory and then I think about it a lot. But so I was sitting here one day and I wasn't having any issues with them and I was thinking, I don't know what took me to that thought, but I thought, you know, if mom and dad could be alive again and sitting here in front of you, waiting to hear what you had to say, what would you like to say to them? Every now and then I ask my inner child a question and she responds, and oh, brother, it's always a surprise to me. Bubbling up from my gut came up and out of my mouth came, "You come back here and take care of me right now." I was like a deer in the headlights at my own comment, you know. And after I kind of gained a little composure, I said very quietly to myself, "Shelley, they're dead and you're 63 years old." And that was the only thing I had to say to myself. You know, it was like, there's that part of me still wants to be taken care of, the little kid. That's why I say I'm 83 now, almost 84, going on 3. That's it, yeah. I did not expect any of that to come up. I didn't know what my head was going to come up with, and it wasn't my head that came up with it, it was my gut. Yes. So there's that little person in there. She's still coming from that perspective, and she still runs the parts of my life that are a disaster. And trying to overcome that and take authority on over my life and my being, and have recovery in the areas where she's running the show and making a disaster out of it is still a lot of hard work for me. It's still really tough. because I'm stubborn. And so she's stubborn too, and she does a very good job of what she was assigned to do. She's still doing it diligently all these years later. Oh my goodness. So,
As we made spiritual
okay.
progress,
What?
as we made spiritual
Yes, as
progress.
we made. Yes. I don't know. There's a good point to stop. We got really the rest of the next page and just one finished up paragraph at the top of page 117 before we get into a whole other topic. So I'm going to see if we can kind of finish this. Since it's just the three of us, hopefully we'll be able to share and talk about whatever we want to. So let's try to get there. So as we made spiritual progress, we saw through these fallacies, it became clear that if we were ever to feel emotionally secure among grown-up people, we would have to put our lives on a give and take basis. We would have to develop the sense of being in partnership or brotherhood with all those around us. We saw that we would need to give constantly of ourselves without demands for repayment. When we persistently did this, we gradually found that people were attracted to us as never before, and even if they failed us, we could be understanding and not too seriously affected. Yes. Oh, I'm still working on some of that. At least I don't act it out as much as I used to, but some of that still goes on inside me, and I have to go, I don't think you're going to say that to anybody, Shelley. Yes. When we developed still more, we discovered the best possible source of emotional stability. In other words, emotional sobriety, if you will, to be God Himself. We found that dependence upon His perfect justice, forgiveness, and love was healthy, and that it would work where nothing else would. This is where our relationship with God comes in at a much deeper, more profound, and more inwardly, deeply level is, to be able to depend on all of God, all of His qualities to take our life in the direction He wants it to go, and know that where He takes us, that's where we need to go. If we really depended upon God, we couldn't very well play God to our fellows, nor would we feel the urge wholly to rely on human protection and care. These were the new attitudes that finally brought many of us an inner strength and peace that could not be deeply shaken by the shortcomings of others or by any calamity not of our own making. And I do agree with that. It's not that. I've come to that place that he's talking about here, and it's not that I don't have concern over things. I hear some of the stuff that's going on in the world, and it concerns me. As a matter of fact, what the heck was I watching? Getting caught up on a video, YouTube video of some news. I can't remember what I watched now, and I was weeping here and praying because I felt so bad for what was going on some other place in the world. I don't know if it was the law in it, the war in Israel. No, watching a lot of videos about the homeless people around the US and what some of what they're living with and putting up with beyond what I've seen with my own eyes when I've been out in the world, and it really touched me. But the place that I went to wasn't disturbing my own inner peace and contentment. It was me being able to pray and weep for others suffering and feeling very badly for them about it. So yes, there is that. It's kind of a there's that place inside myself where I connect with God, and nothing ever touches that. I don't even let my own problems go there and touch that, my own issues. That's the place where I just fellowship with God. That's sweet and precious and beautiful always, and comforting and nurturing as well to me. But I can still deal with and feel emotionally the hardship and the pain and the suffering of other people as they go through it. Yeah. So I like that last sentence. These were the new attitudes that finally brought many of us an inner strength and peace that could not be deeply shaken by the shortcomings of others or by any calamity not of our own making or even of our own making. This new outlook was, we learned, something especially necessary to us alcoholics. For alcoholism had been a lonely business, even though we had been surrounded by people who loved us. But when self-pity had driven everybody away and our isolation had become complete, it caused us to play the big shot in cheap bar rooms and then fare forth alone on the street to depend upon the charity of passersby. He's talking here about very, very totally low-bottom people who are homeless from this disease. Really is, pretty much. We were still trying to find emotional security by being dominating or dependent upon others. Even when our fortunes had not ebbed that much, and we nevertheless found ourselves alone in the world, we still vainly tried to be secure by some unhealthy kind of domination or dependence. And that can be upon behaviors as well, and substances, of course, beyond alcohol and drugs, or behaviors like gambling or having a sex addiction or anything like that. One where, not even involving other people, but where people do pornography and things like that and spend hours doing it. We still vainly tried to be secure by some unhealthy kind of domination or dependence. For those of us who were like that, AA had a very special meaning. Through it, we began to learn right relations with people who understand us. We don't have to be alone anymore. So that's a good point to stop. And we'll start next time on romantic. We start on romance next time, and they cover every aspect of that very, very thoroughly. I have that section, that page, and the next two pages. And the top half of the page after that, all circled, because it's all really great stuff that they say here.